Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code SPOTIFY for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tuesday, March 14th, 2023. I'm one of your hosts, Blessing Adeoye Jr., and joining me is the Texas Treat, Latino Heat, clicking heads and ripping them to shreds, the rootin' tootin', three-point shooting, nitro rifle, a.k.a. twitch.tv/AndyCortez.
What a morning, indeed.
Blessing. What a morning.
What a morning.
How's it going? How much did I nail that? Because I was kind of freestyling a little bit.
You nailed all of it. You just missed globetrotten headshotting.
Globetrotten headshotting. Yeah. There it is. How's your morning going?
It's great. I woke up to a lot of news about Hyperlight Breaker. And it's like they knew I was going to be on Games Daily. They knew it. They had a feeling.
They heard it. Yeah.
We all sort of coordinated. I hit up Danny O'Dara. I was like, hey, tell my homies at Heart Machine that I'm going to be on Games Daily today. Let's break this today. Let's break the news.
Today. Know? Of course, Greg's been hyping up that we're going to get Andy on Tuesday on KFGD. We're going to get Andy. And everybody thought that meant Andrew Renee. No, I meant Andy Cortez. Andrew Renee, unfortunately, couldn't make it. But we got the next best thing, of course. What was it? The best games journalist? The number one games journalist. The number one games journalist, Andy Cortez. Here to talk about today's news stories. Stories like PS5 Pro reportedly being in development, Hyper Light Breaker looks dope, and more, because this is Kinda Funny Games Daily. Each and every weekday at 10 a.m. live right here on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames and Twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. If you're watching live, you can correct us when we get stuff wrong by going to KindaFunny.com/YoreWrong. If you don't want to watch live, you can watch later on YouTube.com/KindaFunnyGames, or you can listen later on podcast services around the globe by searching for Kinda Funny Games Daily. Remember, you can use Epic Creator Code Kinda Funny on all Epic Store and Epic in-game purchases like Rocket League and Fortnite to help support the channel. To be a part of the show, at kindafunny.com/KFGD to write in with your questions, squad ups, and more. And remember, patreon.com/KindaFunny will get you the show ad-free plus a bevy of bonus content. Housekeeping for you. Strap in, because we got a lot of it. The Last of the Spoiler Cast with Neil Druckmann is up right now on YouTube.com/KindaFunny. Wednesday, March 15th, right after KFGD, that's tomorrow, Greg Miller and Snowlike Mike are going to bust ghosts live on Twitch.tv/KindaFunnyGames in Two Point Campus School Spirits DLC, which is now available on PC, PlayStation, Xbox, and Switch. And you can get Two Point Campus for 30% off during the Steam Spring Sale from March 16th through the 23rd and PlayStation's Essential Sale from March 15th through the 29th. Kinda Funny Games Showcase returns next Monday as a 7-hour stream featuring 14 games. You can come hang out all day on Twitch and YouTube starting at 10 a.m. Pacific time. And for weeks now, Andy has carried Mike and Nick through the lands between in their seamless co-op Elden Ring playthrough. You can join them this Friday as Andy puts his sanity and possibly his health on the line as they try to play all day long with your help during their Elden Ring mini marathon stream. How far are you guys in Elden Ring now?
We just got to Volcano Manor.
Oh, so you guys are really far.
Well, you know, we got to Radahn, and, you know, Radahn gave it to us quite a bit. We got to the Radahn Festival. We were all there, super hydrated, drink a lot of water before this big festival. We had VIP tickets. We got into, like, the cool influencer tent at the Radahn Festival.
Were you guys doing Molly?
All of us were. And that's partly why Radahn just gave it to us. We just, like, we couldn't last, and I was like, you know what? Let's move on to something else. So we got to Volcano Manor.
So you didn't beat Radahn?
We did not beat Radahn. No, I mean, we attempted like 5 or 6 tries, and it's like we're waiting for the Messiah, Steez the Source, which is Mike's character. Again, okay. Just to reiterate, Steez the Source. Mike spelled source S-O-U-R-C-E, like the word source.
Yeah,
but it's short for sorcerer, which doesn't have a U. Because he decided to be a
That's
mage.
Great.
But we're waiting for Steez the Source to come back, because we need our third person to be a long-range freaking dude throwing all sorts of spells. Because that helps take the aggro off of me and Nick, who are up there in the front lines, you know. It's a disaster. I don't know why I do this to myself.
What level is Mike in the game? Is he actually doing the thing where he goes in and upgrades his stats, or is he just fucking getting rid of all of his souls?
He's finally leveling up. He's finally learned. It only took him 300-plus hours playing on the playthrough that he and I have been playing through. He's actually leveling up, and he actually, you know, I did have to level up his weapon after he hadn't leveled it up after what? Again, you know, we got to Radahn, and it took him, like, all that time to level up.
What kind single of weapon is he using?
He was using a mace that, like, it's a holy weapon because he's a he's a faith build, Jesus Christ. We use the power of Jesus Christ.
Praise him.
So he's using, like, magic out of that?
Yeah, he's using, yeah, the faith, it's like a faith kind of mace that, like, when you're, it's sort of like Zelda style. When you're full health, it shoots that beam, that wave of, like,
gold. How is he supposed to upgrade it?
Jesus
Blacksmiths
power?
Don't work on that, right?
Yeah, Mike's whole thing, I mean, back in the day, bless, he had his wizard had a staff, and he was like, well, the staff's made out of wood. Why would the blacksmith work on that? I don't know where to take this.
Jesus Christ.
Just pray for me, dude.
I'm praying.
Just
I'm praying.
Pray for me, bro.
Praise him. And then as a reminder, it is review season still. So episodes of Gamescast, PS Love You, could be pushed around this week. Keep a lookout on your podcast feeds for new episodes. Thank you to our Patreon producers, Tripod Plus Plus and Delaney Twining. Today we're brought to you by Honey, but we'll tell you about that later. For now, let's begin with what is, and forever will be, the Roper Report. It's time for some news. We have six stories today.
A baker's dozen.
Starting with our number one. First of all, I see somebody in chat saying, isn't review season in the fall? Review season is all year now. It's year-round. These games don't stop coming out. The spring season is the new fall. And so, yeah, look forward to some more reviews this week and probably in weeks to come. But for story number one, this is a new report. And this is interesting because it's coming off of a conversation that me and Tim had, about a week or so ago about the PlayStation 5 Pro. This is from Tom Henderson at Insider Gaming, who reports that the PS5 Pro is in development, could release late 2024. His report reads like this. Insider Gaming sources have confirmed that the PS5 Pro is in development and could release with a tentative release date of late 2024. Insider Gaming previously reported that a new PlayStation 5 with a detachable disc drive is scheduled to release later this year. It's understood that this new model will phase out the current PlayStation 5 to cut down on production and shipping costs, in spite of the widespread reports. This is not the PS5 Pro model. This is, quote, just the beginning of new hardware coming to PlayStation users this generation, said one source when talking about the detachable disc drive console. As for what the PS5 specs will entail, details are limited. However, a recently published patent by PlayStation architect Mark Cerny suggests that Sony Interactive Entertainment is looking to accelerate ray tracing performance in video games. Just like with the PS4 to the PS4 Pro, we can generally guess pretty confidently that the PS5 Pro will have increased visuals, performance, and speeds. But as for leaked details, we'll have to wait until a later date to release those. Now, Andy, when I think about you, right, I think about PC, and I think about PC specs. And one of the conversations I was having with Tim when we were last talking about this was, what does a PS5 Pro bring? Do we have a reason to bust out a PS5 Pro mid-generation, right? With the PS4 Pro, that came with the promise of 4K resolution. That came with the promise of HDR.
Said 8K on the box.
Yeah, I mean, well, said 8K on the box of the PS5, I think.
Oh, right.
Yeah, which, like, you know, maybe that's what the PS5 Pro is bringing. My question for you is somebody who is tuned into the ray tracing and DLS, all that shit on the PC side.
That good stuff.
What would you guess is coming with the PS5 Pro in terms of features?
On the box, it'll say you can play Gotham Knights in 60 frames per second now.
Finally.
Yeah.
Finally. I thought you were going to say 16K.
No, it'll say 60 frames per second. I mean, you got to assume that they are just trying to help bolster and get closer to what a PC SKU might be. I don't know if that's to maybe help out their future releases on PC and help sort of mitigate any issues that they encounter whenever one of the PC versions of the games gets out and, shocker, it's not working super well or it's super unoptimized. Maybe they're trying to get closer to what a PC spec can be so they can try to keep things a bit more uniform. I mean, you got to assume that they are just going... When I read this news, bless, in my mind, it's a lot sooner than we would think, but the pandemic was a long time ago, like when it started, and that was in the fall or winter of 2020.
Yeah.
And to me, that just seems like it happened a year ago. But it's like, that kind of makes sense to have a pro model come out 4 years later. That kind of seems like it makes sense, especially when we talk about these 8 to 10 year cycles for these consoles. I would just assume it's going to have better GPU performance, a more consistent ability to get games to 60 frames per second without having massive resolution drops like we've seen, like we saw in games like Stranger of Paradise. I don't want to single you out, Stranger of Paradise, but to be able to get 60 frames per second, that game had to run at like 480p, it seemed. And I feel like they do want to just lower the floor of what performance can be and look like on the PS5.
Yeah. I think when we're talking about timing-wise, this makes complete sense, right? I think usually when you're talking about console generations, you're aiming around like 7-8 years, depending on what generation we're talking about. And I could see a future that we're making our way towards where console generations might be getting longer and longer, because it is, right now, we are having to ask the question of, okay, what is a PS5 Pro? When we get to the PS6, what is the PS6 bringing? I feel like right now there's not the big push in terms of what's happening in television or what's happening with fidelity. On the PC side, we talk a lot about things like DLSS and things like what you get with NVIDIA and other stuff. But are those core features that you can fit into a PS5 Pro or into a next generation console that you can put on a box to go, hey, this is why you're buying this thing. Like, this is what is... this is the next foray into what's taking games to the next level, right? I think that's what I think about in terms of why you would do a pro console. That said, yeah, if we're talking about 7-8 years, the PS5 came out end of 2020. End of 2024 sounds right. That's around the halfway point of the generation, you'd imagine. So I think that works out. What I would like, and this might be a simple request, I would like and I don't know how feasible this is because I'm not a tech person, but the option to get performance and fidelity at the same time, right? Like, we've...
Performance ray tracing, like with Spider-Man?
Yeah, like that kind of thing. But even that to a greater extent.
I feel like Insomniac has that shit so dialed in that they are one of the few to offer that experience where you get all sort of the benefits of... Maybe you're not going to get 4K imagery, but you might get upscaling to 4K. Maybe you're not going to get every object ray traced, but like we saw in Ratchet and Clank... Maybe, you know, Clank has ray tracing on it, and you could see like really nice reflections there. I think that Insomniac is killing the game with finding a middle ground. I just wish all of the developers would sort of follow suit.
Yeah, and I think even with the performance ray tracing mode, correct me if I'm wrong, but there's still some ground you're giving up in terms of fidelity, right? Because you have like three options there between fidelity, performance, and then performance with RT. If I can get the best of all worlds, and I can have a console that is able to make it so that more games are able to do, hey, you can play this in 60 FPS or even like a higher frame rate along with high fidelity 4K visuals, and then also get the ray tracing, like have all that stuff available at the same time, I think that would be the dream. I don't know enough to know if it's the console that's holding that stuff back versus maybe just the difficulty of development and the resources that you are putting towards each of those things. But for me, like,
that's a bit of both.
Like, for me, that's up there in terms of what I'd want. And then I'd like a smaller console. Like, the PS5 is a juggernaut, right? Like, that thing is huge. And having that sitting next to my desk, like, that thing is like halfway up, or maybe like even like more than half of my desk, because I have it on the floor right next to where my desk is. And so, like, if you can make it a bit more slimmer and then add in a bit more power, I think that'd be fire. But then aside from that, I honestly don't know what you would do for a PS5 Pro console that you can put on a box to make people go, oh, damn, I need to pick this thing up.
I don't know if there's anything you can do, honestly. I think, if anything, maybe availability might be nicer. I think for the enthusiast market, that's definitely where people are going to be. I feel like that's where they're going to target. But the overall fan base just wants the PS5. Like, I don't see if... Unless you're telling people, hey, guess what? You're going to get all the sort of crazy PC settings you might get for Call of Duty or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, whenever a shooter comes out on console, there's always the complaints about not enough settings for, like, I want the full FOV slider. I want all these sort of options that I get in a PC version. Aside from that, I kind of agree with you. I think that is kind of a tougher thing to sell, especially when PS5s were only really made readily available within the last like 6 months or so, you know?
Yeah.
Mike, it sounds like Blessing wants the visual triangle.
What's the visual triangle?
Oh, the visual triangle, Blessing. Come on. It's something that I'm trying to get off the ground going.
This is like another WND's thing, that like the Andy Cortez patented terminology.
Kind of.
You need to like publish a glossary.
Kind of. Whenever we do sponsorship stuff with NVIDIA, you know, they're always like, Andy, like, you love the tech that we do. Like, is there a way to talk about it? This is not sponsored, by the way, but it's like NVIDIA. You can buy this from me if you like. The visual triangle, bless.
Mm-hmm.
Resolution, right?
Yeah.
4K, 8K, whatever the hell you want.
Good stuff, yeah.
Frames per second, 60, 120.
My favorite.
And on the bottom right, like, visual quality when it comes to, like, the highest textures, ray tracing, all that sort of shit. Why only get two of one, bless, when mm-hmm. you can get the best of all worlds with NVIDIA DLSS?
That's what I want, yep. right? Like, and I think that could be the move for the PS5 Pro, and mainly because I don't know what else is the move. Like, I don't know if there is a new HDR or a new, like, a thing that is becoming more normalized when it comes to televisions, right? That, like, that people are trying to get in their living room, right? Like, the average person is going to go to the store to get a PS5 Pro to then, like, pair it up with my new TV that has all these features. Is that a thing that's out there? Or is there something we're missing? Is there something in terms of cloud technology that could be implemented with the PS5 Pro that could take it up to the next level? I guess that's the thing I'm curious about. Is the DLSS an NVIDIA specific thing?
It's NVIDIA specific. Okay. Yeah. So AMD has their own version called FSR, and they are all sort of different tech that sort of uses AI in a sense to make the game run better, where they'll upscale. It's sort of like the old school version of checkerboarding back in the day, you know.
But
DLSS, I think, is probably my favorite of all of them.
Do you think there's potential for PlayStation to have their own original patented like DLSS technology that they could sell?
It's extremely possible, because I feel like the more and more these newer PC games come out, now I think when you open up, I'm not sure what game it was recently that I played, bless, but I'm used to always seeing like only DLSS.
Mm-hmm.
And then FSR, AMD's FSR, is becoming more and more of a permanent option. And now Intel has their own version. And it seems like everybody's sort of trying to make their own version of this upscaling technology. There's, I think, even Bethesda when I played Deathloop, mm-hmm. I feel like there was their own sort of game version of that in there as well. And we're seeing more and more of these companies try to, I'd say, take the lead in this tech, or maybe try to become second place, because I know that NVIDIA and DLSS sort of are leading the way there, and AMD is getting better and better with each new release. I do feel like every sort of company wants their own piece of the pie there.
Interesting. Well, we're going to have to see. Story number two, Hyperlight Breaker has been delayed to fall, and it also looks dope as fuck. This comes from George Yang at GameSpot. Developer Heart Machine and publisher Gearbox have announced that Hyper Light Breaker's early access period on Steam has been delayed to later this year in the fall. It was previously set to launch this spring. A new gameplay trailer was revealed showcasing the roguelite's features, including infinite open worlds and an endless amount of weapons to wield. Hyper Light Breaker is a 3D action-adventure game set in the world of Overgrowth, where players are tasked with overthrowing the Abyss King. The game can be played in either single-player or co-op. Hyper Light Breaker was first announced in March 2022 for PC as a follow-up to 2016's Hyper Light Drifter. Now, I saw this trailer this morning, and I knew it was a dope trailer, because as soon as I watched it, I was like, yo, I gotta tweet about this. And I tabbed over to Twitter, and I saw that Andy Cortez had already tweeted about it. That's how I know. When most of us are like, yo, we gotta talk about this shit on Twitter, you know it's a banger. Andy, you are the number one Hyper Light Drifter fan in my life.
In the world.
How do you feel watching this new trailer?
Extremely excited, especially after not falling completely in love with Solar Ash. This seems like exactly what I want from Heart Machine. It's sort of a 3D version of what we got with Hyper Light Drifter. Hyper Light Breaker is going to be a roguelite, and that seems so sick as hell. It's essentially, what it seems to me is like Heart Machine's version of Risk of Rain. You can play it solo, you can play with multiple people, but each world is going to offer new challenges, and you're going to have when they say new, endless loadouts or infinite loadouts or whatever, that gets me so excited, because I feel like a couple of the roguelites I've played recently, especially not Returnal, because Returnal like brings it with the weapon variety, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like sometimes you may not have the super sick weapon, but you have that shotgun with a slug shot.
Yeah,
that's dope as hell, right? I'm talking about the one where you're making your farm, where you're making your
Cult of the Lamb
kind of bummed me out because it didn't bring all of the variety in in loadouts and going out on an adventure and feeling like, oh shit, this time is going to be the run. I am so stacked because I have blah, 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 and this and that. Like when Mike, Nick, and I have played, we've played a shitload of like roguelite games. That's just kind of what we do after these kind of funny games daily streams. And when we played this game called Myth Force, which is a four player, looks like an 80s cartoon first person game, and you are crawling through dungeons and you're getting the sickest like power ups. That's the sort of stuff I want out of a roguelite. I've been recently playing the Return of Castlevania of Dead Cells.
Oh, hell yeah.
A lot of fun. Like, and that's the sort of loadout stuff that I really, really look forward to. With Hyperlight Breaker, I really hope that they bring the heat with these infinite loadouts. Whatever that means, I hope that it is going to kick ass, because I want to go out knowing, oh, I have the weapon I love, and I have this one ability that gives me health back on each hit. Like, exploring these worlds is going to be great. Their art direction is phenomenal. This game is going to be so awesome.
Yeah. It's crazy how much in the last, I'd say, few years, it's been confirmed for me how much I fucking love roguelites. Right? Because it started early PS4 generation with Rogue Legacy when I finally got my hands on that. And I was like, damn. Oh, man, this game is procedurally generated, and, like, oh, man, the levels are randomized, and me really learning what a roguelite was from that game.
Some say the best episode of Blessing Show.
Yeah, I mean, some would say, yeah, go check that out. But, yeah, like, that Rogue Legacy was such a banger for me, and it was so addicting. And then that then led into Dead Cells, and Dead Cells took it to another level where I was like, oh, man, like, it's that same kind of feeling, but also it looks fantastic, and, like, the gameplay is there and all this stuff. And then you get to Hades, and then you get to Returnal. And, like I talked about in that episode of the Blessing Show, more and more we're getting roguelites that are expanding the idea of what a roguelite can be. And you know, you mentioned the infinite loadouts thing, which sounds dope as hell. I look at where they talk about infinite open worlds, and I'm like, what does that mean? Because that is a thing that, like, if they're able to nail that, if they're able to hit that, then that can be incredible. I mean, that brings it a little bit back to the promise of No Man's Sky, and when we got like those original trailers and then them flying off a planet and then zooming out and having like 17 quintillion or whatever the number of planets were, and going to a planet and being able to create like your own journey, right? Like, explore the way you want to, and possibly explore worlds that have never been explored before, right? I think that is such a cool idea. And them being able to procedurally generate open worlds, from what we've seen in the trailer, the art style looks dope. Like, I'm kind of with you on Solar Ash, where I thought Solar Ash was good. It didn't blow me away by any means. I did really enjoy the art style, though. Mm-hmm. And it looks like they're taking a lot of those art style elements from Solar Ash and mixing that with this different genre and mixing it in with the world of Hyper Light Drifter, which I know you love and I know a lot of people love. It seems like they're making a lot of the right decisions with this. And you describe it as their Risk of Rain, which I think is apt. And I also look at it as a Returnal as well, right? Where you saw Housemarque go from, hey, let's make Resogun, let's make Alienation, let's make these 2D arcade games, and then transition it into like this bigger 3D thing and really go hard and really market it and really make it something special. So far, that looks like what Hyper Light Breaker is, and I'm all about it. Again, the gameplay looks dope. The action looks dope. It looks way more action-y than even Solar Ash was. And yeah, I'm all about it.
Yeah, the focus being on combat really excites me. And I know that Heart Machine's combat in the past has been so on point. So yeah, I'm super stoked about it. I saw some people replying to Heart Machine, and that Twitter account has been doing a great job of kind of, you know, stopping any fears that people might have. I saw one person reply, infinite worlds, that kind of worries me, right?
Like, yeah.
What does that mean in terms of what I'm going to experience in the game? And Heart Machine keeps on pointing to the documentary that Danny O'Dwyer, our friend, is working on with Noclip, because Noclip has been doing sort of a, here's making the game in progress, and they've been releasing episodes of the making of Hyper Light Breaker, which is super exciting. I don't mind that it's delayed. I know that a lot of people were super looking forward to that, but much like when Hades came out, I hopped into that early alpha access or whatever it was for Hades and put it down. I didn't play it again until it came out 2-3 years later or whatever it was. So that's probably going to be the case for me. I don't want to burn myself out on, or, you know, I know the whole process and the whole reason for these early access games is to give the devs a better understanding of what works and what isn't working. And they have, they rely on so much community feedback for these early access events. I'd rather just kind of play the game when it's ready to
see,
go.
And that's where I'm at. Is I think it's dope that they're doing early access because that worked out so well for Hades. And I think in the roguelite genre, tweaking like the based on player feedback, like across a wide player base, is very important and very good because it is the thing of, all right, at what rate should we be dropping these kind of items? Like, what kind of... They're so systems-based.
What's broken?
Yeah, like, figuring out what's broken in this thing, in this game system where anything can happen, especially when you're talking about not only infinite loadouts, but infinite open worlds. Yeah, like, you want to continue to test because you want to make sure that you get the balance right. I think at that point, it's all about balancing. And I'm with you that, you know, Hades 2 was announced, and they announced that they're going to do early access, and I think that's going to drop. I want to say they said later this year. I'm not going to play that. Like, I'm like, cool. Y'all beta test the game for me. When the game comes out, then I'll actually play the final thing in the same way that we did with Hades. And you know, we played Hades, and that was such a fantastic experience because they went through that period of early access. I'm hoping that Hyper Light Breaker kind of gets the same thing. And I'm hoping that, that leads to things like the infinite open worlds thing actually hitting. Because I understand where that fear comes from. Because you go back to No Man's Sky, or you look towards something like Starfield, and you have this promise of, oh, yeah, you have all these worlds to explore. Okay,
is it too ambitious?
Is it too ambitious? Is the content going to be good? Or is it going to feel like I am getting these bland, like, unoriginal worlds to explore because it's all made by a computer, right? Like, am I going to be getting something good out of this? I think early access is going to help with that. And then also, you know, I want them to try. That's my thing is there a chance for that idea to fail? Sure. But if that idea hits, then that's going to be something very special. Because if it is, oh man, okay, let me pick up the game today and try and do another run, and I am exploring this world that has, like, you know, cool bits and pieces pulled from whatever their database is for the procedural generation. But if I'm getting like a, oh man, okay, today I'm doing an ice world, like, okay, cool, let's go. Or like, oh man, this part of the world is all lava. I need this ability, so I'm gonna go here and come back. I think creating opportunities for that to happen can be really cool.
And it excites me, the idea that it does seem like it's going to be very Hades-based, where each area is going to kind of a king boss, right? Like, this is the this is the boss of this icy area or this pink forest. Again, you put red foliage in a game, Blessing, I'm in.
Of course.
For something to hold you over in the meantime, if those of y'all weren't able to, maybe you're looking forward to Hyper Light Breaker and you weren't kind of expecting some sort of delay on there, check out Lone Ruin. It's a cool little indie game that I recommended to Bless. It's a Lone Ruin is a top-down, neon-colored, everything is like blue and purple and pink and totally my vibe. And it's pretty neat. It's just very, very simple. It kind of removes all of the big story elements, I would say, out of like most roguelites, which some people don't like, but I do like that this is just hop in and don't think and just play
straight to the game
and have sick ass abilities. So this is a pretty cool one. And I think this is like one of my favorites this year, of just laying in bed, turning on the Steam Deck, putting on a couple of episodes of My Hero on, you know what I'm saying, Barrett? Oh, man, dude. Let's go. Let me tell you, bro. Oh, that too. Yeah.
That's also the thing I love about roguelites, is that a lot of roguelites make really good podcast games. Like, that's how I spent over 30 hours playing Returnal. Is like, that was my game where I was just knocking out all the podcasts that I had stacked up.
Same.
I do want to shout out Pat Spence on Twitter. Replied to my tweet when I tweeted out that this game looks sick as hell. There's previews up for Hyper Light Breaker. The Polygon preview has this quote, which gets me excited. They say,
"Get me in there. Give me the preview.
Let's get in there. Let's break it down. In Hyper Light Breaker, you hack and slash enemies a la Hyper Light Drifter, glide across surreal and picturesque expanses a la Solar Ash, get bludgeoned by giant brutal bosses a la Dark Souls and Elden Ring, and can team up with other players to overcome challenges a la Destiny 2.
Come on, man.
Like, come on, bro. This sounds sick as hell.
Jeez Louise.
Like, I know I said I'm not going to play the early access. I might peek in there. I might peek in there just a little bit to see what's up.
I hadn't seen this part of it either, Bless, and now I'm like, oh my God, dude. Come on.
Yeah, like, let's fucking
go. We've seen the previews of, like, there's one of the enemies that straight up just looks like Bloodstarved Beast, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, just a big-ass kind of wolf-looking werewolf sort of thing, and you know that you got to be dodging and parrying at the right moments.
God, a neon Dark Souls-esque game with all those fucking colors is, like, the most Andy Cortez thing. That's based in the world of Hyper Light Drifter.
Get out of town.
Most Andy Cortez shit possible. Do I need to play Hyper Light Drifter to play this game, do you think?
No, because Hyper Light Drifter's lore is very Souls-like, where it is like you're not being told anything. You're not watching cutscenes. Like, well, you're watching some cutscenes, but there's no dialogue. All the dialogue in the game is all based on little drawings. So when you talk to somebody, they talk to you in like a series of three drawings. Here's what happened. Here's how my life was. Then this dude came to town and just destroyed everybody. Now I'm alone here. And like, that's how you're kind of getting the story come across to you. But you should just play it anyway, because the boss fights are super fast and frenetic and awesome as shit. And every time you clear a whole room, your character goes whooshing, and then your fucking drifter just sticks your little sword in the ground.
I might pick it up.
It's incredible.
I was talking to a friend about this recently, because I realized this about myself. When it comes to difficult games, give me like a 3D game and I'm good. Like, give me a Dark Souls or like a Bloodborne or Elden Ring or whatever, or like a Sekiro or Wolong. I can handle myself pretty well. If you give me something that's either 2D or top down, that's where all my skill just dissipates. Like, that's why like Hollow Knight is such a difficult one for me to get into, because the idea of engaging in difficult combat in 2D just destroys me for some reason. I can do it in 3D all day, but 2D just fucks me up.
Well, you do have the different axis here of it being sort of top down. You know, I think side scrolling difficulty is certainly a different taste of difficulty, you know, like in Hollow Knight. I think that is, I understand where you're coming from there, but the idea that this is essentially a neon Legend of Zelda Link to the Past type game where you have a sword and you have a sword made out of hard light, and you have a pistol or a shoddy.
Hard light.
Dude,
that's crazy.
I'm telling you, bro. Play Hyper Light Drifter. Yeah, it's pretty good.
That's dope. Before we get into story number three, I want to let you guys know about patreon.com/kindoffunnygames. Over on patreon.com/kindoffunnygames, you can get the show ad-free. And speaking of ads, let us tell you about our sponsors.
Shout out to Honey for sponsoring this episode. Honey is the easy way to save when shopping on your iPhone or computer. And thanks to Honey, manually searching for coupon codes is a thing of the past. And we all know there's nothing better than the feeling of saving money. Honey is the free shopping tool that scours the internet for promo codes and applies the best one it finds to your cart. When you check out, the Honey button appears, and all you have to do is click apply coupons. You wait a few seconds, you see the fun little dancing guy. Honey searches for coupons and it finds you the best ones, and then you just watch the prices drop. We here at Kinda Funny have been using Honey for years, and it's helped us save thousands on tech, costumes, food, you name it. Honestly, I just love how easy it is to just set and forget and save. That's the best part. Honey doesn't just work on desktops, it works on your phone too. You just activate it on Safari on your phone, you save on the go. If you don't already have Honey, you could be straight up missing out. You can get PayPal Honey for free at joinhoney.com/kindoffunny. That's joinhoney.com/kindoffunny.
If you're an athlete, you know the greatest motivator of all is the fear of letting your teammates down. After all, a team is only as good as its weakest link. So you owe it to those wearing the same jersey as you to be your best every time you step on the field. That's why there's no vape in team. When you vape, you can expose your lungs to toxic chemicals that can damage your lungs. If you're a step behind, the team's a step behind. Brought to you by The Real Cost and the FDA.
Story number three. A prequel to The Last of Us was planned at one point. This is Jordan Midler at Video Games Chronicle. Naughty Dog had planned to let another studio make a prequel to The Last of Us at one point. It's been revealed. Studio co-president Neil Druckmann appeared on a kind of funny spoiler cast and claimed that another studio has set to adapt an element of the story that would later be repurposed for The Last of Us TV show. Spoilers for The Last of Us TV show. All right, if you don't want to be spoiled on The Last of Us HBO, fast forward like 5 minutes unless you're watching live. In that case, get spoiled.
He kills Ellie.
The element of the... That'd be such a wild twist. He walks into the hospital room. He like aims at the doctor and then points the gun at Ellie and like, twist, bitch.
They show Craig Mazin and he's like, yeah, we felt like it was the best twist for the show. And they showed Neil Druckmann. He's like, I don't know what Craig was thinking.
Yeah,
like,
I called it. I was sick that day. I didn't show up and he fucking ruined the episode, man. Fucking Craig. The element of the HBO show Druckmann referred to was the inclusion of a fleshed-out backstory for Ellie's mother, played in the TV show by Ashley Johnson. The character, who is only briefly referred to in the game, plays a much more significant role in the series and is given a backstory that never appears in the video game series. It is this story that Druckmann seems to claim would have been adapted by a different studio. Speaking to Kinda Funny, Druckmann said, quote, there was a more full version of the story that went more back in time, that was going to be made into a video game, not by Naughty Dog, but a different game studio. Quote, Greg Miller introduced me to that studio. We had talked to them for quite a while to do this thing, and then it didn't quite work out. End quote. What a fucking wild story.
THQ was Embracer Group.
Yeah, rest in peace, THQ. It was going to be Volition. It was going to be Saints Row style. Last was game. Ellie's mom was going to say a lot of curse words, which she probably would anyway.
Oh, but. Yeah, for sure.
This is really cool. Like, it's one, if you finish the show, go watch the spoiler cast. It is a fantastic spoiler cast.
It really is.
Neil Druckmann didn't hold anything back. Like, he answered all of our questions. Like, he was actually very open and very cool to talk to. And I think it is a must-watch/must-listen episode. But also, yeah, like, we got a lot of tidbits like this. And I'd say this is probably one of the two biggest stories to come out of that interview. The other one being that, like, Naughty Dog has for sure chosen their next game that they're going to work on. Neil didn't tell us anything about it other than, like, hey, like, we know people want The Last of Us Part 3. Can't talk about what we're working on next, but it has been decided, and we have reasons for why we decided on that thing, which I think is a pretty cool tidbit that he shared.
We selected the thing we are all most excited for,
yes.
Which I got to assume is not The Last of Us 3.
I don't think it's The Last of Us 3. Yeah, I think it's going to be a new IP.
Especially, not only that, but also some people in the comments mentioned that when Greg is talking about, all right, well, yeah, the next project as well as Factions, right? Mm-hmm. And then Neil replied, yes, The Last of Us multiplayer game.
Yeah.
He didn't say Factions.
I think it's not. I think that's partly because they don't want to claim that they're calling it Last of Us Factions yet. And then also, maybe it's just not called Last of Us Factions.
Yeah. Maybe I gotta assume it's not.
Maybe it's called The Last of Us multiplayer game.
Yeah.
Put that on the box.
The Washington football team.
Do you have a guess on what the studio could have been? On who the studio could have been working on this game? Like, what studio would you want to make a Last of Us prequel story?
Well, I guess it comes down to what we're expecting out of what the game could be. If, like, I don't know if you just have another studio try to mirror what Naughty Dog did with The Last of Us.
Mm.
Like, that doesn't seem super possible. So I got to assume it's a completely different style game. Like, I don't...
Puzzle game.
I mean...
A fighting game.
Like a Telltale game.
A roguelite.
Mm-hmm. Like, that's like, I wouldn't, in a similar way to where, you know, Bayonetta is all wild or whatever, and then you get Bayonetta Origins, which is a totally different style video game. I got to assume that whatever this thing was going to be far different, because it's just really hard to kind of make a game like Naughty Dog makes, and immediately the comparisons would be out there. Naughty Dog didn't work on this. Mm-hmm. Look at this fucking game. Naughty Dog didn't work on this. It's obvious. Like, Naughty Dog puts insane amounts of care and polish into their video games, which is why even The Last of Us Part 2, which came out 4 years ago now or whatever it was. When was it?
Three years
coming
ago.
Coming up on 3.
The fact that most of their games, even like Uncharted 4, still looks like it came out this past year. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I feel like that's a really, really tough ass to have another studio try to emulate that. Yeah. So I got to assume it would have been a far different video game. Maybe like a Match 3.
You've had the Match of Us. But like, I think you're onto something. I also think, you know, the fact that we've had Uncharted for the Vita happen, and like, that game wasn't bad, right? Like, that game was decent, but it's one that always gets compared to like proper being like console Naughty Dog Uncharted, and it's one that kind of falls by the wayside. I don't think that if this game was in talks after Uncharted Golden Abyss, then you would think, hey, let's do this with the idea of, dude, whatever's going on outside is fucking crazy.
The wind is crazy right now.
The wind in San Francisco, y'all, is fucking insane right now.
The atmospheric river. We're about to blow away right now.
Yeah, if all of a sudden the camera goes sideways and like always fall to the side, it's because the wind just fucking flipped the studio over. But yeah, no, I think you're onto something, right? Hey, what if we did something that was more either narrative, choose your own adventure? What if we could make a Last of Us game that is more like The Walking Dead from Telltale, or like Heavy Rain or Life Strange or something like that? Or what if we made something that, like, this is what I try to think
some
of.
People throw out Deck Nine, which I think is a pretty good assumption.
And I was gonna say, what studio does Greg Miller have connections to? What studio would Greg Miller intro Neil Druckmann to? What if it was a Last of Us Gone Home style game? Is in first person playing as Ellie's mom,
Fulbright.
Picking up items, maybe a Fulbright, or maybe like something like that. Like, Telltale, I think Greg would have connections to Telltale too. But yeah, who knows?
He won't tell us.
No.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah. What if you got him on the show? Is that him walking in?
Oh, here he is.
Greg Miller's walking in right now. Are you willing to share the secrets? Do you know what we're talking about right now? Do you have a peep in your mouth right now? What are you chewing on? We're talking about the...
You're eating chicken at 10:51 in the morning?
Yo, Mike makes things show up on DoorDash and you just eat it. You don't worry about it.
So right now we're talking about the prequel to the Last of Us game that got canned, yeah, and who we think that studio could have been. Do you do you want to share the goods?
No.
Oh man.
I mean, for me it was pretty clear. We broke the news, right? Because Neil broke it on our show with a story about me. But since he went out of his way not to say what the studio was, I feel like I can't either.
Here's a blessing. When I go to WrestleMania, I'm going to get enough alcohol in this man to put him down for weeks. But before that, I'm going to be like, so what was that studio,
bro?
What
was that studio?
I'm going to get it out of him. I'm going to get it out of him.
I'll tell you guys. I don't, you know.
Oh. Damn, I don't know. Is that easy?
I'm going to say it's Fulbright. It's Fulbright. Gone Home. The Last of Us.
I was saying Telltale.
Yeah. Want to make bets?
Someone in chat was saying Kojima Productions.
Pizza Bet. Oh, could you imagine?
Okay, well that's a studio that could make a fucking like a Naughty Dog style game. So yeah.
Turned into Metal Gear Survive. That's how that happened. Fucking crazy.
Mm-hmm.
Story number four, PS Plus is getting a new day one release in April. This is Ryan Easby at PlayStation Lifestyle. PS Plus is getting a new day one release in April, and it's one you might not have seen coming. Meet Your Maker will be launching on PS Plus on day one in April, which could be a huge boon for the game itself. Meet Your Maker is a games as a service title in which you play through other players' user-generated content that they've built. Thanks to the day one release, this may mean that the game finds a larger player base, which also means a larger variety of user-generated content. Have you been keeping up with Meet Your Maker at all?
No, I remember seeing it way back in some presentation. Maybe it was a state of play, or maybe it was some smaller thing that we saw. I don't remember when this was, but the main character reminded me a lot of the main character in Loot River, and I just get sad about how that game kind of came and went.
Did you ever check out Loot River?
I did, and it just wasn't for me. I wasn't a huge fan of it.
I forgot that came out. That looked so cool when we saw it in the showcase.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is when I remember when the original trailer dropped for Meet Your Maker. I want to say it was sometime last year. And I thought it looked really cool. I still think it looks really cool. The beta came out. I've not tried the beta. But the idea of you are playing through other users' generated dungeons and they can like make these fucking kill rooms for you to get through, I think it's clever. It comes with the worry of games that have a focus on user-generated content.
You need a lot of fans for that.
You need a lot of fans for that, which I think is really smart that they're putting it on PS Plus. But then a lot of the time, they come and go, right? I think of something like Dreams, which I love Dreams. I peek into Dreams every now and then. Like, every year, me, Greg, and Janet do the Impies for Dreams, which is their award show. And every single time I look back at it, I'm like, damn, Dreams is fucking cool as hell. Like, even just a few weeks ago, I tweeted out some footage of a dream that was basically this Xenoblade Chronicles style JRPG, and people are doing really cool things in Dreams, but people don't talk about Dreams at the same time. You know, it's not a game that you hear about
as
often.
The bear shits in the wood, you know?
Yeah, like, Meet Your Maker, that aspect of it worries me, just from the user-generated, and also, is the user-generated stuff going to be good? Are you going to have a player base that really, like, brings the heat and is able, oh wow, this clip looks interesting, that brings the heat dude is fucking crawling on the ground, what the fuck is up with that? That brings the heat and like is in, you know, a steady flow of user generated content, also progression through that stuff that is satisfying to play through.
Like, are they coming for Roblox's stuff, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
are you gonna walk into, like, I swear to God, a blessing, every time I go home, visit my family, my nephew and nieces are always playing Roblox. I'm just like, please stop playing Roblox. Please,
it's like,
God.
It's a different world. Because like, it's like they have their own console in that game.
It truly is. Like, I feel like the people that play Roblox don't know that other video games exist.
Mm-hmm.
And like, they don't necessarily even need to, because the stuff in Roblox is crazy enough.
Yeah.
Because they're the sort of community around it making stuff and making user-generated content is insane. And I completely agree with you that I think it's so difficult for a game like Meet Your Maker, which, again, good on them for going to PS Plus and, you know, opening themselves up to a wider audience. But your game is going to live and die on the user-generated content.
Yeah. I mean, I also look at something like Mario Maker. And Mario Maker has its fan base, of course. But that is a game with Mario in the title, where you can make unlimited Mario levels. And granted, some of this is on Nintendo because they just don't update shit as frequently as they probably should. But even Mario Maker is one where I'm like, oh yeah, that's fucking on Switch. I can play that at any point, can't I? Like, that's not, that feels like a game that should be one of the biggest games in the world. It's unlimited Mario levels.
So yeah, people say Mario fell off.
Nobody would say that. I'm so excited for the Mario movie. But yeah, like even that, I wouldn't say it came and went, right? But even that doesn't have as much staying power as you would think that it would.
Right.
And so I'm curious to see how Meet Your Maker does. That it strikes me as one where week one, I think Meet Your Maker might be hot. I could see it, especially if it has the stuff. I think week one, Meet Your Maker is going to maybe, you know, have the conversations online and have people have the eye of the public. Beyond week one, that's the thing I'm most curious about. Like, are you going to have the staying power? Are you going to stick around? Are people going to play this long term? But we shall see. Story number five, IO Interactive says the next major Hitman game is a little bit on hiatus. This is Tom Ivan at Video Games Chronicle. IO Interactive has told Hitman fans not to expect the next major entry in the franchise anytime soon. God damn it. While the studio plans to continue evolving its World of Assassination trilogy, it appears to have shifted its primary focus to its upcoming James Bond project. In January, IO rebranded 2021's Hitman 3 as Hitman World of Assassination and incorporated content from Hitman 1 and Hitman 2 into the package. It also added a new game mode called Freelancer, a single-player offering featuring roguelite elements, strategic planning, and a customizable safehouse. And IO has told Eurogamer that fans can expect further experimentation with what Hitman can offer before the studio eventually begins work on a new mainline series entry. Quote, "We have such a wonderful platform where we can keep experimenting with what the formula can do and what people expect of it," said IO co-owner and chief creative officer Christian Elverdum. Quote, "And then at some point, obviously, as any creative, it would be nice to then go in and say, okay, well, with everything we've learned, what would that be if we had to rearticulate a sandbox? What would that look like?" End quote. Elverdum added, quote, "Right now, a major new Hitman game that's a little bit on hiatus as we're building another Agent Fantasy that's also taking up a lot of our time. But obviously, we'll come back to the beloved Agent 47. He's still very much in the heart of this company," end quote. Last month, IO announced that it's working on an online fantasy RPG. Like its Hitman and James Bond projects, the game is in development across its studios in Copenhagen, Malmo, and Barcelona. There you go. Sadly, and it is honestly predictably... you assume that this is the case, right? Like, you're working on James Bond and you got a fantasy game. Do you guys have the space and time to work on Hitman? Especially after putting out this big Hitman update and then also, like, putting out the Hitman trilogy that I would go on and say Hitman World of Assassination is just the best stealth game ever. Like, it is fucking incredible what they achieved with Hitman World of Assassination. Take a break. I think we're good for now. I think the idea of experimenting and doing periodic updates could be cool to see where you go with the next Hitman. The new mode, Hitman Freelancer, is such a good experience and such a smart idea and concept. That's the roguelite Hitman mode that they added. I see myself having infinite fun with it, honestly, right? Like, it has that randomization element where it is, I can keep going back and have new things happen every single time I play the game. I think that's cool. If we get a one new map a year, honestly, with that, I'm cool. I don't know if they're even going to do that, but I think with that, I'd be satisfied anyway. I think whatever they do for the next Hitman game has to be a bit more ground up. All right, you're revolutionizing what Hitman is once again. Like, we're finding new systems. We're finding new bananas to throw at people. Like, what are the different ways you can interact with the world to create an entirely new sandbox? I think that's what they need to do with the new Hitman, and that's going to take a very long time. And so, yeah, focus on James Bond, focus on the fantasy game, and then, like, just continue to sit and think about Hitman and experiment to see what you're going to do next. That's what I'd say.
Yeah, I think they're so set up to win. Like, they... not only are they working on this next big Bond project, and that's something you cannot mess up. Like, that's a big ass IP. You have a lot of sort of status behind your name at IO, right? A lot of people are going to expect a lot out of this new Bond game. But I think they set themselves up to succeed with this sort of roguelite mode in World of Assassination, where it's almost just like a platform now.
Yeah,
it's not necessarily like you don't have to necessarily worry about making a brand new campaign for whatever this DLC could possibly be in the future for Hitman. I know they said it's on hiatus, but like you just mentioned, there can be smaller updates in the future that don't need to be massive because they are now this sort of platform that you can just add a couple new weapons here and there. There's so many, it opens them up for smaller wins that don't necessarily need to be massive content drops. Yeah. I think it's super smart.
Yeah, 1,000%. It's funny because when they first started Hitman, the new Hitman one, right? So like Hitman 2016, I want to say, somewhere around there.
You're right.
That was originally pitched as this platform. Hey, we're going to do episodic. Like you're getting a new Hitman episode every other month or something like that. And then they did that rollout for Hitman 1, and then they shifted with Hitman 2 because that didn't work out for them. Oh, yeah, like, we didn't get the money back. Turns out people will show up for episode 1 and then not show up for the next 3 episodes, and then when we put out the last episode, people will then buy the full thing. And so episodic just didn't work. But they had that in mind, right, the idea of a platform and a long-lasting game. You know, Hitman 2 was more of a standalone release. Hitman 3 was more of a standalone release, but they've kept the idea of bring the old levels forward, like continue to build this into a bigger package as we move forward. And now it feels like they're going back to the idea of how can we best make this a platform? It becomes like
No Man's Sky or Master Chief Collection or something
that,
you know?
Yeah. And adding in this roguelite mode, setting the expectation of, hey, we can make it so that we have big updates and small updates and maybe update it as years go. I think they've treated it in a very smart way, and I think they've absolutely nailed what Hitman what Hitman can be, and I think what Hitman probably should be from now going forward. You know, yeah, sit on it and maybe do small updates here and there. I'm down for that. But then, you know, come back to Hitman eventually, because goddamn, what a good game. Final news story, story number 6. Microsoft announces a 10-year partnership to bring Xbox games to cloud service Boosteroid. This comes from Chris Scolian at Video Games Chronicle. Microsoft has announced another 10-year partnership with a third party as it continues to try and push its acquisition of Activision Blizzard over the finish line. The company has signed a 10-year agreement with Boosteroid, the largest global independent cloud gaming provider. According to Microsoft, the deal will see Xbox PC games coming to Boosteroid, though it hasn't been confirmed when this will happen. Crucially, Microsoft also states that should its acquisition of Activision Blizzard go ahead, you're not going to get me, Barrett. You're not going to get me on this one.
I almost fucking got you, though.
You almost got me because I was like, what is a banana partnership? That's really good. The partnership will also see Activision Blizzard titles, including Call of Duty, being added to Boosteroid 2. Microsoft used the announcement to repeat its claim that this deal and other partnerships already announced will bring Call of Duty to, quote, more than 150 million additional players, end quote.
Is this like one of them, like, before I knew WhatsApp was the largest texting service in the world, I had no idea what WhatsApp was. Like, this is one of those things where I like didn't know Boosteroid was this popular. And that just shows how myopic we can be as Americans sometimes.
Yeah, when I first saw the news story, I was like, Boosteroid, interesting. And then you read like the largest global independent cloud gaming provider. I'm like, oh, all right, no, it makes sense. All right, cool. Keep doing your
business
thing,
moves.
Microsoft.
Yeah,
business moves. Andy, I'm so curious to see what the final result of the Activision Blizzard acquisition ends up being. But the final results are so far away. If I wanted to come out to mom and pop shops today, where would I look?
The official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, as listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show hosts each and every weekday.
Yeah. Does your family not use WhatsApp?
No.
Interesting.
No.
I guess my family spread out like globally, and so I guess that makes sense why we would use up WhatsApp. But I always keep thinking of it as something that everybody uses.
I started using WhatsApp because of Lucy, Tam, and Simon, and then I hadn't really used it since
ever since Lucy
and Tam moved over here.
Yeah,
but like, yeah, that's when I started using it, when we were having our Overwatch dates.
That's funny because I still message Tam and Lucy on WhatsApp specifically.
That's amazing.
If I need to text them,
that.
Yeah, specifically. I never thought about the fact that they probably just have American numbers. Out today, we got Escape from the Red Planet for PC, Vernal Edge for PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, and Switch, The Legend of Heroes, Trails to Azure for PC, PS4, Switch, Terminal Velocity for boosted edition for PC. Valheim game preview. Now you're not getting me. You're not getting me.
That was last second Hail Mary.
Banana. I saw you type that in. Valheim banana game preview for Xbox One and Xbox Series X. Hot Wheels Rift Rally for PS5, PS4, and mobile. And then delete after reading for PC and mobile. I'm gonna delete that. New days for you. Varney Lake. That was Vernal Edge. Varney Lake releases April 28th for PC, PS4, PS5, Xbox Series X, Xbox One, and Switch. Lightyear Frontier Early Access has been delayed to an unknown date. Puzzle Quest 3 is scheduled for worldwide release on April 18th for Xbox Series X, Xbox One, PS5, and PS4. Tron Identity launches April 11th for Switch and PC. Let's fucking go. And then System Shock Remake has been delayed to May 30th with no date for the console version.
That's a lot of video games, but I mean, I've just been playing Destiny 2 so much. Bless.
Oh, yeah?
I've just been on the Destiny 2 trade. I'm addicted, bro.
I'm kind of excited for Tron Identity. That was a Mike Bithell joint, and that was part of the Disney Marvel game showcase. And Mike Bithell personally sold me on this game, and so... Yeah, look forward to Tron Identity.
Heard a good-looking man kind of helped reveal that game.
A very good-looking man did, who had a haircut that at first he wasn't feeling, but then he grew into it.
He also revealed the 4v4 Avatar game.
Okay, we don't talk about that. Deal of the day for you. Wargroove, Double Trouble, Banana... God damn it! God damn it! Fuck! I was like, he's not going to give me today. Wargroove Double Trouble Banana Bundle is $5.99 on the U.S. eShop.
Remember when Nick Scarpino was super into Wargroove?
Was he
Think
really?
Think about that. No. He was really into Wargroove. Really? Yeah.
That's funny.
It was a place in time, yeah.
Is he excited for Advance Wars 1 plus 2?
I don't know, but he was really into Wargroove.
Is he excited for Wargroove 2?
We'll have to ask him.
Yeah,
we'll have
to find out. Does he know? He definitely doesn't know what exists.
He has no shot. He thinks that
he's going to go crazy for Wargroove 2. Was he making his own campaigns and shit?
I just remember him being like, I like the little dog.
All right, now it's time for kindoffunny.com/you're wrong, where you write in, let us know what we got wrong, as we got it wrong, so we can correct it for those watching later on YouTube and listening later on podcast services around the globe. And you have just one you're wrong for you. Kebabs writes in and says, No Man's Sky contains 18 quintillion planets per galaxy. That is per galaxy. There's 255 galaxies to explore. You're telling me there's 18 quintillion times 255 255 galaxies. Planets. That's fucking crazy.
It's too much.
Who's gonna explore all that? I ain't got the time for that.
Mm-hmm.
I got a job. If I was jobless, maybe. If I didn't have a full-time job, maybe I could explore that many planets.
I'm playing Destiny too,
and that video game at least has 7 planets to explore. Tomorrow's hosts for Kinda Funny Games Daily are me and Greg Miller, the man who won't tell you that Fulbright Studio was the ones working on the prequel to The Last of Us. If you're watching this live after this, it's Sons of the Forest with Mike, Andy, and Nick. If you want to catch that stream later, you can subscribe to youtube.com/kindoffunnygames. Remember, this has been Kind of Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday live right here on youtube.com/kindoffunnygames and twitch.tv/kindoffunnygames. We run you through the nerdy news you need to know about. Until next time, Game Daily.